You are listening to the Rewards Canada podcast.
Okay, well, welcome to episode 63 of the Rewards Canada podcast series. Today's show is sponsored by EQ Bank. EQ Bank launched in 2016 as the digital arm of Equitable Bank. It's a digital banking platform providing Canadians with state-of-the-art digital banking services, including the EQ Bank Savings Plus account. With an everyday 2.3% interest rate plus the flexibility of a checking account, unlimited transactions, no everyday banking fees, no minimum balances, fast, cheap, and fully transparent international money transfers, it's all the more reason to choose EQ Bank. The rates, of course, are subject to change. So this is our 2020 Trends episode, and we're extremely pleased to welcome frequent travel expert Gary Leff. Gary is a co-founder of InsideFlyer.com. It's a place for frequent flyers to meet and learn using the latest technology. A few little accolades about Gary. Well, Rolling Stone magazine has called him the godfather of the frequent flyer hobby. The New York Times describes him as a travel industry blogger whose specialty is in spanking companies that devalue their loyalty programs. And of course, Yahoo Travel has declared that this guy knows points. So Gary, welcome to the show. We're really pleased to have you.
Always happy to talk about this stuff. I enjoy it probably more than anything. Don't tell my wife that.
We'll keep it a secret. And Patrick, of course, it's great to have you back on the show in your regular chair as we discuss trends for 2020. So gentlemen, let's start then. Let's get right into it. Let's start by talking about what we perceive to be the big storyline of 2020, and that's to dive right into the marriage between Air Canada and Aeroplan. After we do that, we're going to turn our attention to look at the future of coalition programs and then talk a little bit about U.S. and international markets before wrapping up and discussing the state of the credit card industry. So let's start with Air Canada and Aeroplan. I guess I'll ask you this first question, Patrick. What can we expect between now and July?
Yeah, so I expect that we're going to start getting some good news trickling out. And what I mean by good is actual more details on what will kind of the program will look like. We've gotten some hints of it over the past 6 months or so. There's been hints from Mark Nasser when he's been spoken at some conferences on what we could expect from the program. And, there's some updates to their terms and conditions that came out just before Christmas, caused a little bit of an uproar, but really they had actually revealed that news a little bit before that. So I think between now and July, we're going to start seeing, some of more of the bones of the program being revealed to us. You know, hopefully we'll start getting ideas of what's, maybe their reward charts will look like, partnerships, and definitely we'll learn about the future of their co-brand partnerships. That's what a lot of our listeners are keen on, is what are the credit cards going to look like. And, with the program launching in July, I wouldn't be surprised if we start getting news on that in the next couple months here. Just even little teasers on what's going to come.
And just before we get your take on it, Gary, you had mentioned that Amex, of course, has pulled two Air Canada Aeroplan cards. So, are you thinking that they're working on some new cards? Is it behind the scenes? Is that what we expect to be happening?
That'd be my guess. Yeah, they pulled the ultra high premium Aeroplan Plus Reserve card and also their entry level Aeroplan Plus card. Now that Reserve card, when it was actually developed with Air Canada and not with Aeroplan. So that was an Air Canada credit card, had the highest annual fee in Canada outside of the Centurion card. And as of late last week, that card was no longer available along with the entry-level one. So this, I believe, is an anticipation of relaunching some new cards towards the middle of the year.
And Gary, what's your take on this being the sort of the lead storyline for 2020?
All right. So at a meta level, I think that the useful frame for speculating about what's going to happen is to remember that Air Canada's reacquisition of Aeroplan from AMIA was funded by the payment partners. So, you know, TD, CIBC, and Visa put up the money to reacquire the program, you know, $450 million to AMIA and the assumption of, you know, they estimated $1.9 billion in points liability. And given the forward roll, and this deal was put together pretty quickly, we have to assume that the cards take a very, you know, front and center position in the new program. They're very much not an afterthought. I mean, they're sort of in the driver's seat. The other thing that I have in my mind is, with that much money, you know, that they are really driving things, you know, they want to make sure that they get value out of that investment. And so I have to think that the new program is one that's going to, you know, offer a lot of value. That having been said, in a counterfactual world, I suspect that I would have liked it better had Air Canada had to be in a position of rebuilding its own program from scratch, right? They would have had to spend a lot of marketing dollars to acquire customers. And then they had, you know, information on customers that had purchased tickets, but they didn't have all the transaction data or the members that weren't their flying customers, right? So, you know, instead of spending, say, you know, a couple of $1 billion building up a program, they spent a couple of $1 billion to acquire a program. The money went to AMIA, right, and existing members and their points liabilities, rather than to new members of a program. So I would have loved to see a world in which they had to spend to build a program from scratch, and where they were also still competing against Aeroplan, as opposed to, say, competing against WestJet and Air Miles.
Okay, so those are some good points. So essentially, you know, the question is this going to be the same program? Is it going to be a better program? Maybe a worse program? Patrick, what's your take? What do you think is going to actually be presented at the end of the day?
I think it's going to be a little bit of both. You know, like I said, Mark Nasser's already revealed some details, and we know that there's going to be some perhaps expansion on their dynamic reward pricing. I mean, they already have it in place with their market fare award flights, where it's basically the amount of miles you redeem is tied into the price of the ticket. You're kind of access to any seat on any flight as long as those seats are open. So I think they're going to further expand on that. But he also said they're going to keep some of the best kind of outsized value redemptions. So that's your kind of classic flight reward. So some of those will stay there. The ones that are more popular with a lot of their flyers and collectors. And the thing we have to remember that, you know, I think where we might see some of the hits kind of that dynamic are the ones that are popular in the frequent flyer community, the business class or premium class flights, since they make up such a small percentage of their overall, you know, flights that Aeroplan gives out of that overall market, that's where they can kind of do the bigger hits, because it doesn't, you know, piss off as many holders within the Aeroplan program, because majority are redeeming just for economy class flights and they're within North America. So it's a little easier to take a hit on those people that are traveling to far-flung destinations in business class.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, Gary had already mentioned WestJet, but how will this affect the Canadian market in general? In other words, are there card issuers that will be forced to up their game? You know, competition's good. It hopefully inspires some innovation and hopefully brings more to the table. But what's the general take? What about you, Gary? What do you think this will ultimately mean for the market in general?
Well, compared to a world where Air Canada had simply had a contract with AMIA to provide an Aeroplan program, I do think that this makes Air Canada a stronger competitor, likely to be able to innovate more and do some different things. I mean, it was very difficult in the relationship that existed, and certainly, you know, both contractually and in terms of the frictions between Air Canada and Aeroplan to really do interesting things for members. You know, one of the early changes that Air Canada made when they reacquired the program, I mean, the simplest thing in the world, doesn't affect that many members, but you know, getting rid of change fees for super elites on awards, right? Which was something they could never do with Aeroplan before, because you say, gosh, we want to get rid of this, like top elites around the world, aren't being nickel and dimed. You've got to spend, $20,000 a year with us. You're finally getting your reward for your loyalty. And, something happens, your plan changes, and we charge you a fee. We got to solve this, right? Aimia would be like, okay, you don't want us to charge customer, then you can pay us instead. And so having the two parties was a challenge in making innovative changes, customer friendly changes, and just the fact that they've made a couple of minor tweaks already, even in advance of rolling out the new program. So just having it all in house makes things easier. Now, that having been said, there are still challenges, as we know, with tech and whatnot. But one unified entity as a competitor, I suspect will be a stronger competitor.
Okay. Patrick, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, we years ago they were saying, the competitive market in Canada will be better when the kind of Air Canada Aeroplan split was announced. Because we thought there's going to be a lot of competition between the programs, between Air Canada, between Aeroplan and the rest of them. But having Air Canada and Aeroplan combined now, I think that competition is still going to stay there. In fact, I think, like Gary said, it does make the program stronger, and it's going to make all their competitors, whether it's proprietary credit card programs like your BMO rewards, RBC rewards, all of them take a strong, hard look at what they offer, and they're going to have to up their game to compete with this new Air Canada program, because it is going to be so much stronger.
Well, great. Well, of course, we'll continue to follow this storyline and provide updates as they become available. I guess the natural segue from talking about Air Canada and Aeroplan is to talk a little bit about what coalition programs look like in this country. So with, Air Canada bringing Aeroplan back, how will this program ultimately be marketed? Will it be a frequent flyer program, or will they maintain this notion of a coalition program? So let's start by answering that question. Again, we're speculating here, but I'll start with you, Patrick. What's your sense telling you? Is this going to move strictly into that frequent flyer program look and feel, or will there be elements of the coalition program that remain?
In some ways, I hope it goes back to being more of just the frequent flyer program. I think it can provide more value in general. But it may be tough because a lot of the current members are used to the coalition program. They're used to what Aeroplan has been and compared to Air Miles. It's just really tough. Like, we don't know right now. Air Canada hasn't revealed details on what sort of partnerships they're planning beyond what they already have. Right now, Aeroplan has lost many of their non-travel partners outside of airlines, hotels, and car rentals, and their Aeroplan e-store for online shopping. There aren't many places that you can earn Aeroplan miles. They lost Esso, they lost Sobeys, they lost a lot of the big retailers across Canada where you could earn those miles. So this is a good opportunity for them to either rehash a lot of partnerships or say, we are going to focus on being a true frequent flyer program rather than the coalition model.
And from your perspective, Gary, coalition programs, of course, aren't that popular in the U.S., but what's your hunch telling you? Is this an opportunity, as Patrick said, to either go all in on a frequent flyer program, or are there elements, and is it an opportunity to rehatch what Aeroplan offered by way of a coalition program?
Well, they're going to be able to do a better job on taking care of communicating with airline customers than they had done when the two programs were split. It's going to be easier to deliver not just airline specific, but across the program benefits to the top airline customers. That having been said, it's certainly not going to be a predominantly airline program in the sense of the credit cards are front and center. It'll be a frequent spender program alongside a frequent flyer program, right? That's given that we've got a couple $1 billion on the table, obviously the card products take center stage. In terms of coalition programs, and for that matter, the same reason that Aeroplan loses partners, the challenge I think is what are these programs offering to retail partners? beyond just the ability to, sell miles that can be awarded to customers, kind of renting out the currency. The real value comes from offering an infrastructure that allows you to communicate with your customers without building it yourself, and a data capability to really know your customers. And coalition programs haven't always done well. And they said, gosh, we have this base of customers and you can sell to them and they're going to choose you because of the currency. And there may be some element of that, but what really retailers need is, who are our customers and how do we communicate with them and how do we find more like them? And in the US, American Express tried building a coalition program, Plenty, which they closed down. And there were challenges in terms of, who owns the data, for your customers. And for that matter, other than the largest initial signups of large retailers, how do you even process transactions? So they were telling retailers that they were going to have their customers send in receipts, right? Or like take pictures and submit receipts to get credit. And this is like crazy. Maybe some of this gets a little bit easier over time, especially as we get more, blockchain adoption or, to do sort of instant processing, bring on partners quickly. But bottom line is, how do you track this? One of the really interesting things, I think, is programs that get access to credit card transaction data directly, right? So that there's not any sign up necessary, that the merchant can really just know. So one of the providers in the US is a thanks again. You go to an airport and you make a purchase in the airport from a merchant. You might earn 1 mile per dollar in your favorite airline program. But what you're really doing is giving the airport information on who the airport's customers are, because they don't get that information from the airlines. And so maybe that way they know who it's the same person that's parking as buying food, but may not be shopping retail, and they can cross sell. And get total transaction volume up in the airport. And it's a potentially useful model for shopping malls who have lots of different tenants as well. There's potential in this coalition model, as long as you're able to deliver quality data and good communication with customers. Some of that's technological and some of it's cultural, and some of it has to do with privacy policies.
Well, and of course, here in Canada, the big program besides Aeroplan is Air Miles. And if we take a look at what they're doing or not doing, as the case may be, there's perhaps an indication there that the coalition program model needs to be reimagined in some ways. Yes, it's about the data at the end of the day for the retail partners. But there's got to be an injection of fun involved here too. And in the last little while here in Canada, at least, a lot of that fun's been sucked up by topics like expiration policies and these sorts of things. Patrick, what's your sense? I mean, is this something where we may have in fact hit the end of the road for the coalition program as we know it, and it may be a perfect opportunity to part ways altogether?
It's entirely possible, especially, I guess, in a large coalition program model like Air Miles and Aeroplan. I mean, Air Miles isn't going to go anywhere, but they haven't been really growing in terms of partners. I haven't seen any major partners being added. They add little ones here and there, and they've been really strong in remarketing the program after their debacle a few years ago with the whole expiring miles issue. But I think what we're going to see more of are these kind of mini coalition programs, like More Rewards and Scene. I think they wanted to grow, but they haven't. But they're kind of niche market players, and I think we may see more of this, because nowadays the back end systems to start your own loyalty program are easy to find, and they're not very expensive. In fact, they're a lot cheaper than joining a program like Air Miles or Aeroplan. So we're starting to see a lot of companies just launch their own little loyalty programs because the technology's there to do it on an affordable basis, and not have to spend the big dollars that you have to with a program like Air Miles or Aeroplan. So is it dead? Maybe, Air Miles isn't dead, and I don't think they'll go away, but the coalition model as we know it, I think, is kind of reached its peak for sure.
Okay, well, why don't we shift gears then from coalition programs to talk a little bit about you know, the U.S. and international markets. And Gary, maybe you can set the stage for us in terms of some of the trends that are happening in the U.S., well, as well as international, that you think could potentially affect the Canadian marketplace.
Right. So, I mean, I think that the trends have been very much the same. In some areas, the Canadian marketplace has been ahead of the curve. And in other places, it's sort of kept right up there. So with airlines, we've seen a shift towards rewarding, you know, higher and higher spending customers rather than folks who are just flying a certain number of a certain distance. And, you know, look, Air Canada was the first one with the to really top out at a higher dollar amount for top minimum spend for top tier status at 20,000 Canadian. Now we're actually seeing United letting you do either flying plus 18,000 US in spend or 24,000 US spend alone, regardless of flying volume, as long as you have four minimum segments on United to earn their top tier of published status. So a trend towards focusing more and more on the premium customer rather than the frequent customer, as well as a trend towards making more award seats available, although at more of a low average value per point. And that's the market-based fares and that come about in large measure because the number of miles that get printed, in part because of credit card partnerships, sort of far outstrips the ability for an airline to redeem those at the traditional saver level. So it used to be an airline would release saver award space for empty seats that are going to go unsold. And, you know, those seats cost them almost nothing to fulfill because once a plane takes off, an unsold seat is worth nothing to them. But in a world where load factors are full, they're high, there just aren't a lot of unsold seats that they can offer at those prices. And so printing more and more miles and having fewer and fewer seats for those miles to chase is a problem. One way that airlines have solved that is by assigning a value to the miles to then go and buy the fare, but they control that value and it's not super high. The real leverage of the programs in the past has come from being able to buy seats that consumers value at a much higher amount than than it costs the program to deliver. That's the saver model, which is here's a very expensive seat, but it's but it costs almost nothing to provide because it was going to go empty anyway. Consumers get high value for their points as opposed to this average value, which really comes about because of too many miles chasing too few seats, which is the programs being a victim of their own success, selling miles to bank partners, as well as tightening capacity discipline, not just growing for the sake of growth and not just battling out competitors with more and more capacity. You know, when you used to just have lots of planes being thrown at routes to try to drive out competitors, you had lots of empty seats, and gosh, you just don't have that anymore. And these things largely repeat themselves around the world. We've seen more revenue-based programs out of Air France KLM. We've seen it out of Lufthansa as well, and we're seeing big changes even in Asia, where Delta has a joint venture with Korean Air. They've taken an ownership stake in Korean, and now we're seeing a huge devaluation in the award chart over at Korean as well. Where I had seen hope for the programs in Asia as the last refuge of value, especially in South Korea, where consumer protection laws have kind of slowed down the pace of change. In many cases, it wasn't that long ago where a Korean just wasn't able to impose the mileage expiration they wanted, and they had to extend that out to 7 and 10 years even. We're beginning to see change there. I still do see the some of those programs in Asia. ANA, Asiana is offering tremendous value, but kind of the trends that are sweeping the world are in fact sweeping the world.
Patrick, you want to weigh in on what you're seeing?
So I totally agree with Gary there. We've seen this kind of whole dynamic model shift on the you earn miles based on revenue and not your flown distance, and the same on the redemption side, just in general. But a couple of programs that seem to be avoiding that somewhat, and two very popular ones for Canadians, which I'd love to get Gary's take on, are, you know, Alaska's Mileage Plan and even British Airways Executive Club. Now, I know they're kind of, British Airways Executive Club's kind of all over the place, but, you know, they have their redemptions are based on a mileage distance. And if you connect, you have to do the next mileage distance. But again, they can provide some outsized value, especially Alaska. Alaska's like the best, one of the best programs out there. I just want to hear from Gary what he thinks may happen with them this year.
They have viewed their mileage program sort of being the last one standing with the traditional model as a competitive advantage. And it is. There's no question about that. The challenge, I think, for them is that having swallowed Virgin America in their merger, they've had a lot more bumps in the road than they would have liked. And that's, you know, hindered their financial performance overall. And when airlines are doing well, it's very easy for them to chart their own path. When they're not doing so well, a herd mentality kind of sets in, where they don't have the good argument when they get asked by, you know, financial analysts why they aren't doing some of the things that other airlines say help their bottom line. And that's why we saw, you know, Alaska go along with basic economy fares that we've seen from other airlines in large, because they really just didn't have a way of saying no, because their financials aren't doing well. And analysts are saying, well, look, it's helping other airlines. It's not always obvious that that's true, but when everyone else says it, and you're the, you know, you have license to go in your own way when you're successful. Alaska has struggled a bit with their merger, and that's, you know, that is a challenge. However, I think they have long said and do recognize that you know, customers choose them because of their loyalty program. And, you know, Alaska has found itself, you know, successful in spite of a monstrous incursion by Delta into, you know, their largest home market in Seattle because of the loyalty of their customers. So I do think that it would be a mistake for them to upend the program. And even as they've added new partners, this isn't just a legacy thing. I mean, I think they really still do, you know, believe this is the model, because as they've added new partners, those partners have tended to continue to offer good value. I don't fully trust accumulated mileage there. We've seen instances where they've, you know, made changes without notice to the program, but I certainly do, you know, think that there's a lot of value in the program. I also, I mean, the biggest challenge is that there's only but so many ways to earn their miles versus some of their competitors. They don't have as many partners, you know, or as lucrative, you know, credit card options and transfer ability with, you know, as many options, which, you know, the scarcity of their miles makes them, you know, more valuable still. On the other hand, they also run some great promotions, you know, selling miles at a reasonable cost that can work out fairly well if you're looking to redeem for premium cabin travel, you know, on some of their partners.
Well, great, and we're gonna shift the conversation over to credit cards now, and really start to explore a little bit about what we can expect from issuers this year, as well as, you know, let's look at some Canadian offers and see whether or not some of those will be matched down south. But before we do that, of course, we want to talk about our partner for this particular episode, and that's EQ Bank. And so EQ Bank, I don't know if you knew this, Gary and Patrick, but they are in fact Canada's ninth largest independent Schedule 1 bank, and they employ more than 900 people across Canada. EQ Bank is the digital arm of Equitable Bank, and recently they partnered with TransferWise in a first-of-its-kind collaboration in Canada that offers customers a better way to move money overseas. What does that mean? It means fast international money transfers that are up to 8 times cheaper. Of course, you can get more details on EQ Bank at eqbank.ca. So yes, let's talk about credit cards. Patrick, you pay a great deal of attention to the Canadian credit card industry and new offerings all the time. What, if you were to look in your crystal ball, do you see coming down the pike from the credit card issuers this year?
Well, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, there's anticipation there'll be some new Amex Air Canada cards with the new partnerships. We'll just have to wait and see for that one. And I think we're going to see just all the issuers really make a hard push to gain new card members, steal card members, or keep their card members based on what Air Canada is going to do. We've seen that in the last 4 or 5 months, the number of increased welcome bonuses and first-year free offers coming out on cards to try and get people, you know, kind of locked into their cards. And so I think we're going to continue seeing some better offers like that. But what we're seeing now is a move to not getting the full bonus on your first purchase or even a small amount of spend over like 3 months. We're seeing that being spread out to 6 months to 12 months, that to get the full welcome bonus, you have to hold on to the card longer. And we're seeing a lot more of this from the issuers. There's very few cards out there where you get the bonus on your first purchase. I mean, you have the WestJet RBC World Elite MasterCard with its current offer of $350 WestJet dollars on your first purchase. You really can get that bonus by spending only $1. And there's very few cards out in our market that allow that. All the others do require more spend. And as Gary's known for years and years, this whole foreign transaction fee that started out in the U.S., that cards came out with no foreign transaction fees and has been there for probably close to 8 years or almost a decade now, has really just started to appear in Canada. We've had it, you know, probably half a dozen years, but there's only like two cards that had it 6 years ago. And now we've seen it jump up to close to 10 cards that have no foreign transaction fees. And so I think we may see a few more cards come out with that. And hopefully it's some of the more popular ones as well, because the cards right now with no foreign transaction fees tend to be from the smaller competitors outside of Scotiabank who are trying to make inroads in our market.
And yeah, I know, of course, we spent a good deal of time this past year talking about no foreign transaction fees. Gary, why don't you share your thoughts on, you know, any trends that may be coming your way in the U.S. landscape from the credit card companies?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that we started to see foreign transaction fees eliminated on travel-specific cards in the U.S. was not as a way of driving some kind of additional value to card members, as much as just looking at the data. You know, Chase was an early adopter of this, and what they saw was that when, you know, their card member would travel overseas, they would put their Chase card at the back of the wallet. And then what would happen is when they would come back to the States, it would not find its way back to the top. So, you know, if they were just using another card for foreign spend, that might not have even been an issue, but it actually had a longer term effect on consumer adoption. And so we started to see, out of the, you know, bank's own self-interest, you know, eliminating foreign transaction fees on cards where they first, you know, saw it as highly likely to be a benefit that was used because they wanted to make sure that they kept, you know, the card member business rather than having an inflection point where somebody decided not to use the card anymore.
So on that point, Gary, as you said, it was in their own self-interest, but basically they got rid of it as a way of making sure the customer ultimately kept using their card.
Well, they want you to use it all the time, including when you're abroad, but most importantly, you know, they don't want to risk you not using it again when you come back. And from there, it became sort of table stakes for any kind of travel rewards card. Even, you know, Amex was sort of late to this, but finally started adopting it, you know, first in their Platinum card and then beyond. But some of the other things that we're seeing down here, because we've been seeing, you know, higher spend requirements for initial bonus offers for quite some time, we really started to see, you know, back, I'd say about 15 years ago. Those spend requirements at the time were rather modest, $250, $750. Now the biggest bonuses may have components, you know, where you spend, you know, $10,000 or $15,000, but over 6 months. So they're high. It basically requires you to, many customers use them as your primary card for a period of time, rather than just having it and activating it. But we do see other trends as well. Here the space has been so competitive that many of the banks have basically been spending the entire interchange or merchant swipe fee on their rewards customer. Really, then the only way they're going to make money is if they are able to attract interest payments. They make money on the revolve. But with premium cards, not all of them are likely to attract customers who do revolve. So we've been seeing some cost cutting. among the most lucrative cards. We've been seeing higher annual fees. You know, those creep up, you know, first to $95, then maybe $150. We see, you know, some modest cutbacks of benefits. Citibank and Barclays entirely and eliminated almost all of their travel protections and purchase protections, your trip delay, baggage delay, kinds of protections. And these really only cost a few dollars per card member, but they're betting that some of these lesser known benefits aren't really driving consumer behavior, and if they can save a couple bucks a card member over their whole portfolio, they can get the spreadsheet to get rid of those parentheses at the bottom and turn a product profitable. So, you know, cuts here and there, higher fees we're seeing, but that's really just a correction to the last, you know, 3 or 4 years where we've had a real arms race of earning points faster than ever before. And layering on of benefits. You know, we've also seen along that list of cutbacks, you know, American Express and the cards that give out priority pass cards for airport lounge access that say, okay, we're going to do that. But, you know they may limit the number of guests, but they also limit which lounges you can visit. Priority pass figured out that they're getting paid on a per swipe basis. They just want swipes. They went and signed up a whole bunch of restaurants. They're not really lounges, but you get a $28 credit at the restaurant for food. So you swipe your card and they bill the credit card company. Well, American Express said, you know, look, no more. They cried uncle. And won't pay for those anymore. So we're seeing a pendulum swinging back to, you know, careful cost controls, as well as trying to ensure that they limit their exposure to what they call gamers. They don't want to just pay out expensive bonuses to people who aren't going to keep and use the card. And so people who are signing up for lots of cards or signing up for the same card over and over just aren't going to be either eligible for approval or for earning the bonus. And I think that, you know, it's a little bit harder to point to the U.S. market as, you know, leading the world, because the U.S. market's a little bit unique. You know, Europe and Australia, for instance, cap interchange. And so their markets for cards are very different, although you certainly see, you know, a lot of cost control and higher fees, as well as cap earning in those markets, because they, you know, need to limit their rewards cost and they need to charge you a lot to be able to earn rewards to make it all work out when you're not generating a lot of revenue at point of purchase. And they enter into interesting arrangements like American Express and Air France. Rather than American Express buying miles from Air France over there, they split the interest payments generated by the consumer. They're kind of in a joint venture together.
You know, Gary, interesting what you were saying there also about the notion of rewarding the gamers. That's something that we've talked about over the years, just in terms of what role those, call them enthusiasts, play in this industry, and that fine line of, you know, keeping them engaged versus shutting them down or shutting them out. Patrick, what's your take on that comment in particular, just in terms of what we're doing here in Canada? Do you see the credit card companies sort of taking aim at some of those, call them gamers, of the system?
Absolutely. I mean, Amex has right in their terms and conditions. They always say new cardholders. So if you've had that card before, and it doesn't matter if it's been a year or two, they can refuse your bonus. There's some, I guess, workarounds to it. Some people are still getting the bonus several times, but they've definitely, Amex has been kind of the leader in cracking down on that. But we've seen it from other banks, and I think we'll just continue to see it more, that they're going to start cracking down on the gamers of the system, especially when they're offering these first year free offers, because that, you know, was making cards for free. You cut it after 3 months and then apply for it 3 months after that. So I think we'll see less of that. And that's why we're also starting to see, as Gary mentioned, in the US, the bonus to earn the bonus, the spread out of the amount you have to spend. You have to spend more on the card and you have to spend it over a longer period of time to get you to hold that card longer rather than just get it for the bonus and cut it up. So yeah, we're seeing the trends. It's a lot of things Gary touched upon there, I think we'll see happen in Canada over the next few years, or we'll see continue. Right now, we're still kind of on the up for benefits being added to cards. We're seeing more and more insurance benefits and kind of other non-point, non-mile rewards being added to cards, but I think that may peak as well. But I think we're a couple years behind the U.S. on that. We're going to see what happens with Air Canada Aeroplan, and I think at least till 2022, we're going to have kind of a growth and expansion of the market, and then we might have a correction, just like we saw in the U.S. a few years ago.
Okay, well, there you go. There's the that's the optimistic takeaway here. An upward trend, at least until 2022. I'd like perhaps to end on that note. So guys, look, that was great. Thanks so much for sharing your thoughts. Gary, of course, it was excellent to have you join us today. Gary, why don't you let folks know where they can find you online? What are your coordinates?
So find me at viewfromthewing.com or in social media at Gary Leff.
Terrific. And of course, we'll post that on the website and include links. Thank you, guys. This has been great. That wraps up our 2020 trends episode. And look forward to hearing feedback and continuing to report on the industry. Thank you.